life's illusions I recall.
Australia's most generous prize for religious art is celebrating its 60th year. The Blake Prize is named after the 18th century poet, painter, and mystic William Blake, who challenged the Church of England and rejected its sexual mores. Hello, I'm Rachel Kahn. Welcome to The Spirit of Things on Radio National, on air and online at abc.net.au/rn. It's a matter of debate just what part of Blake's legacy should be in the foreground, his reverent use of mythic and mystical imagery, or his dissenting views on sexuality and church power. In our day, the debate has morphed into whether the Blake Prize should reflect broadly humanistic values and personal spiritualities, or directly engage living religious traditions. Today, my guests roughly represent the two sides of the debate, with Rod Pattenden, a Uniting Church minister who's the chair of the Blake Prize, and the Sydney Morning Herald art critic John MacDonald. Later, we'll briefly shift to the Blake Prize for Poetry and hear Robert Adamson read from his winning poem. In the meantime, the winning artwork was by Khalid Sabsabi, a 90-minute video of a communal Sufi prayer meeting in suburban Sydney.
I'd like to now make the announcement of the winner for the Blake Prize of 2011. It is the work by Khalid Sabsabi.
At the press conference was the chair of the Blake Prize, the Uniting Church minister, Rod Pattenden. He's an artist and an educational facilitator. He's co-director of Interplay Australia, which explores the spiritual wisdom of body movement. And I met him at the National Art School in Darlinghurst, Sydney.
Rod, how long have you been chair of the Blake Prize?
I've been chair of the Blake Prize for the last 5 years, and I've been involved with the Blake Society for about 15 years, and it brings together my interest as a person trained in the arts but also who works in a church. So it was a wonderful invitation to bring those two worlds together.
It's a peach of a job, I would imagine. But how many people have been submitting their art to the Blake Prize over the years? Has it increased?
It certainly has increased just in the last few years. I think the Blake has shaken off a reputation for being an old-fashioned studio religious prize and has reinvented itself as a contemporary art prize. And there are now works that are digital, video, photography, a wide diversity of things that are attracting younger artists. One of the key opportunities we've made available is that it's recently become a digital judging process, which has meant that artists from around Australia and some overseas artists have actually submitted work for the prize, because it's a simple, it really does help people who are at a distance. So this year there are over 1,100 submissions, and I think maybe about 350 submissions about 5 or 6 years ago. So we've certainly leapt in the number of interest and the subject matter being addressed.
And what international contributors have you had?
Well, this year we have one artist from Canada who posted a work that's been done on a couple of pieces of roofing slate. And I have the box here in storage with all the Canadian stamps on it, where he's very carefully wrapped it up and posted to it. So it's quite exciting to see that there's international interest in the prize.
Mm. Well, tell me how it's changed from its original intent as a place where religious art, great religious art, would be judged and eventually find its way into, you know, the community churches and worship places. Mm.
The first prize was awarded 60 years ago, in 1951, and the great central aim of the prize was to invite Australian artists to submit works that would be purchased by churches and synagogues. The originators came out as a result of a conversation between a Jewish businessman who imported art prints and a Catholic priest who loved art, and their intention was that, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if Australian churches could have Australian Jesuses by Australian artists? And 1951 was just after the Second World War. People were rebuilding. There was a new national confidence. And so the prize began with that impetus as a one-off event. But due to its success, it was continued. And in the 1950s, it became one of the hottest places for young artists to submit works. There were few other opportunities then, given the bias was for a more conservative bias from some of the other prizes, such as the Archibald. So in the 1950s and 1960s, artists pushed the boundaries. They were more interested in a wider view of religion and spirituality. And that's why I think the Blake got into some controversial water in that time. But certainly now, 60 years later, you look at this exhibition, the 60th year, you see Aboriginal artists, artists from various parts of Europe, Thailand, Burma, Asia. So there's a wide number of traditions. It really does reflect the multicultural diversity of Australia.
And yet, generally speaking, the art world isn't full of religious artists, is it? I mean, it would be more challenging to find artists who really were literate enough in religious traditions to want to comment on them.
That's one of the contributions the Blake does provide. It's not just a prize and award to one artist, but through this process we invite artists to address this subject matter. What is the religious imagination? What causes you to passionately involve yourself in activities in life? What makes you angry? What turns you on? What structures life? What is it to thrive? What is it to be at the edge, to be at moments of excess? What is it to be alive, to feel that passionate sense of aliveness which we all search for? These are a wonderful set of questions, and they lie outside mere doctrines or religious symbols. So we do get a wide diversity of responses which annoy as well as bring insight.
Well, indeed, we're sitting under a painting here with suitcases floating in water, and of course it brings thoughts of people who are coming from overseas with very little with them. Tell me about the religious significance of this.
This is one of a number of works in the exhibition this year which reflect on the journey through water, boat people perhaps. This particular work, the artist tells us, comes from a conversation with his grandfather about migrating to Australia with all of his life pared down to what he could carry in one suitcase. So that's a very challenging task, to take all your history, your memories and your resources for the future in one single suitcase. And I think this story reminds this artist of people who are currently facing that dilemma, to travel with hope of a future to Australia, and that impetus to put all of your life at risk in a dangerous journey, looking for what? Well, looking for home, looking for a place where you can broaden out and give your children a future. It's a very, very general, human, seductive and hopeful activity to search for a sense of place.
Well, I guess it's not only immigrants, but other people are always finding themselves confronting aspects of a new culture or new aspects of a culture and try to fit it in with their own. And we're sitting across from a really elegant, large triptych by an Aboriginal artist, which combines symbols of two very different religious traditions or spiritual traditions.
The work that we're referring to borrows from references to the Australian landscape and animals, but also has references to the Masonic tradition, the idea that God is the builder and the architect of creation, very fluid and also very very structured views of religion. It's probably a good example of a number of works in this exhibition that are syncretic or try to bring two different views together. It's very much like, I think, all of us are faced with pulling together, weaving together our sense of spirituality, our sense of belief, or the things that we hold dear that guide us like a compass. And often we will draw on more than one tradition. The work not far away that by the Torres Strait Islander artist is a wonderful depiction of Noah's Ark. They're gathering together all the things that should be preserved for the future, and there is Astro Boy and Batman and other representatives of popular culture. It just reminds me again that we do pull our life together in a meaningful whole, we'll attempt to do so, and we will often draw on examples from popular culture of the world which we live.
And may I just say, that particular work is so elegant. It's so reverent in the way it's executed, isn't it?
It's a beautiful black and white liner cut that would have taken weeks and weeks and weeks to do, which beautifully evokes several different traditions in the one place quite comfortably. It's amazing that life can be lived with such complexity.
Indeed, and again, the wonderful incorporation of iconic biblical stories with contemporary culture in between the two that you described is a Martin Sharp depiction of a sort of Aboriginal Madonna as it were, a very well-known painting of his. But also further on, there is a triptych of the crucifixion.
Luke Roberts' work has drawn some controversy already, and we haven't awarded the prize. He has in this very Baroque and exotic depictions, very theatrical, so in that sense it's very traditional, but instead of figures that we would recognise is people who are well-known, Vanessa Wagner, who's a well-known drag queen, and Richard Bell, who's an Aboriginal artist, and you say, well, what are these people doing in such a holy, reverent place? Well, these are figures in Australian culture who would be outside. These are the outsiders, and the artist has included them as personalities within these depictions. So he's perhaps drawing a critical edge to remind or confront Christians about, well, where are the boundaries of welcome and hospitality within that tradition.
Well, another confronting painting, but also beautifully executed, is a triptych of the Trinity, which depicts orangutans with saintly halos. Now, I love orangutans, and it's obvious that that's a reference to evolution and so forth. But I can imagine a lot of Christians being rather upset, scandalized by the idea of the Trinity being represented with these red-haired orangutans.
Well, this is something unexpected and unfamiliar, that an artist will adopt the gold and dark and evocative colours of icon writing. And in this place you'd expect to see a Trinity is these three orangutans. But of course, what is that about? And of course you very quickly jump to the realisation that this is a creature, a beautiful creature, God's creature, that is facing extinction. And so this artist, who's a very passionate environmentalist and very active in her support of efforts to preserve that species, is reminding us of the holiness and the reverence towards creatures. After all, human beings are creatures. It's something perhaps that we find discomforting about our life, that we are also a creature. And many religious traditions teach us to honour all of creation and the ground we walk on and the air we breathe, because it's part of us.
Rod Pattenden commenting there on Dawn Stubbs' icon of three orangutans, which she called G9 for Genesis 9, which starts, "And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth." We're talking about the Blake Prize for Religious Art here on The Spirit of Things with Rod Pattenden. Later we'll hear from the art critic John MacDonald on whether the Blake Prize has lost its way.
Well, Rod, Islam has quite a presence this year in the Blake Prize, and certainly in my experience of the Blake Prize, that's pretty new.
That is exactly the case. There's been in the last few years quite a number of younger artists coming through from Middle Eastern backgrounds, obviously with Islamic religious traditions. And I think it's quite surprising to us to see the strength of the work in this year's exhibition. Two of the winners will be works that come from this tradition, that image for us a sensitivity and respect towards that tradition, and evoke it in very beautiful and evocative ways. So it's a turn for the Blake. It's quite a new page in our history, and I think it recognises that people of Muslim background are making a strong, positive and welcome contribution to the resources of our culture, that they have perspectives and insights to offer us as a culture.
Do you think that's a necessary political step for the Blake Prize to make, that the winner this year is a Muslim artist and depicting a quite a traditional scene?
It's a surprise to me as a person who's overseen the judging process, but these works are very good. They're very evocative and very powerful, and so they arise after the judging process, which is a long and laborious process, to be given the award. So I think it's a surprise to all of us that these works have risen to the end of the process with such strength.
Is there something of a disconnect between the way, the ironic and critical way in which Western traditions are represented and evaluated, by comparison to the acceptance of this much more reverential expression of the Islamic faith?
Certainly with the winning work, you really are invited in to sit on the ground on a small Persian mat and to watch a three-channel video of a Sufi ceremony. So it's very hospitable. Your gaze is invited not as a detached art viewer, but as a participant. That's a very unusual invitation to have from an artwork. And as we watch the video, you're watching people moving around, a mother cuddling her daughter to the sound of the Sufi chant. It's very seductive. It's very engaging. And you can only but sympathetically engage it with your own imagination. What are these stories? What are these narratives that are sustaining this very small, fragile community in the west of Sydney that gives them their identity? There are other works from a Western tradition that try to do the same thing. It's as a person who looks at a lot of art and looks at the way artists deal with religious subject matter, I realise for myself as a complex human being engaged in between traditions, trying to put it all together, that I in fact do desperately need a sense of humour. I think irony is actually such a gift. It allows you to participate, but also participate in a critical manner. I think if one is only pious, you become very quickly like a fundamentalist. Everything around you becomes just a sign of affirmation. I think to believe in this postmodern situation, in a complex world of competing demands, you really need a sense of humour. I mean, the only way to have sacred cows is to kick them.
Well then, can you, with your sense of humour and ironic turn of personality, imagine anything like the Muhammad cartoons being exhibited here in the Blake Prize, given that Australians are very comfortable with kicking their tradition a bit and having a laugh? But we've experienced that presenting Muhammad in an ironic, critical and funny way could be a dangerous thing to do.
Well, I recognise quite readily the danger in making fun of other people's gods. I think it will be a sign of maturity in our culture when Muslim artists present to us the complexity of their tradition. I think that's, in some sense, it's my responsibility to deal with my tradition, to reinvent it, to critique it, and to make it come alive for me as a resource. And I think what we're beginning to see in this exhibition is that Muslim artists are actually critiquing, questioning, and presenting to us the vibrancy of their tradition. So I look for them, I think, probably to answer that question.
I know that the Blake Prize and your own perspective is very much toward the now and the future. But what about the past? I mean, is the past always stuffy, or can we manage to look to the past to find some extraordinarily rich symbols that can speak to the present? For example, why not a painting about St. Augustine or someone who was equally radical in his past, speaking to the present? I don't see much here of history, and I wonder whether you think that could be more fruitfully plumbed in the future.
I would agree with you. I think the only way you can form the future is by an intelligent apprehension and understanding of the past. Otherwise, one just recycles the mistakes of history. Lacking a sense of history is extremely dangerous. And I'm very aware that there is a thick richness and nurturing generosity in tradition. Things don't continue unless they have that sense of value and nurturing. So particularly I think as a religious person, one of the resources that we are badly in need of in our largely secular culture is the stories of religion. They tell us about what it is to be human, which is far more than just as an economic indicator or another statistic on someone's measuring device. Religion, I think, since the beginning of this century, there's somewhat of a revival of interest and relevance in the role of religion in culture in a wider sense. That really interests me. I've been at a number of seminars with younger people, university age, who are showing a much more generous interest in what religion has to offer as a perspective. They're quite discerning and critical, but they're actually wanting to engage in these questions from the tradition in a way that I don't see with the previous generation.
Rod, can I ask you finally, do you have any sense that the Blake Prize is having an effect, an impact on religion itself?
I think the Blake Prize is drawing attention to the resources of religion, the religious imagination, what spirituality might look like for people. It's getting people to think about that as a resource for their lives. The exhibition travels around Australia for the rest of the year, to regional Queensland and Victoria this year, Tasmania. And we're getting large numbers of people who are coming to the exhibition, and there'll be education opportunities. So this exhibition is addressing thousands and thousands and thousands of people with questions in quite an interesting and engaging way. Well, given that we live in a consumer society where spirituality is one of the things marketed, I think the Blake Prize will provide people with an opportunity to look, to pray with their eyes open, to look a little wider, and to think about the way they shape their lives. So it probably operates quite differently to a religious institution, which I guess I'm a little regretful that some religious institutions work behind closed doors. They say, well, this is the only way, not only you can believe, but you must behave. So at least the Blake addresses that question in a wider way. And I can understand why some people might think, from a religious perspective, that the Blake has too many voices and too many options and is a little out of control.
I wonder whether churches and synagogues and temples and other places of worship could become places where the works of the Blake Prize are hung and people come in to view them there in those places. Because, of course, travelers go to Europe to look at the frescoes and the ceilings, and they find themselves constantly going in and out of churches, gazing at the art, and being moved. I wonder whether we've given up that aspect of our sacred places here in Australia.
Well, I would love to be contacted by any clergy listening. We would love to arrange a rental arrangement where works could be situated in a church. And as you're aware, the exhibition went to Melbourne last year and was exhibited in a church, which really did change the way you approach the works. And I think it really enhanced it. So that would be a wonderful outcome. One of the things I'm hoping for next year, as we complete our celebration of the 60th year, is a project called Engage, where communities can use the idea of the Blake to, perhaps with a childcare centre, an aged care centre, and Marrickville Council have just awarded a $5,000 grant to a group of clergy and an imam and a priest who want to run it in that particular area and get as many people as possible thinking about this basic question about hope. What gives you hope in your life? And that is a question, I think, which hovers most centrally around the Blake Prize.
And never more so than for the many hopeful artists who submit their works to the Blake Prize, over 1,000 this year. You can look at the 70 finalists by clicking the link on our website at abc.net.au/rn/spiritofthings. Other useful links are there too, about Rod Pattenden and my next guest, John MacDonald.
One of my fellow judges, Julian, talked about it in terms of hospitality. I think that's really strong this one. We get to see also a very particular religious ritual taking place in a very sort of everyday, family-orientated community setting.
John MacDonald, the art critic for the Sydney Morning Herald and author of a couple of books on Australian art, has been described as a, quote, neoclassicist who refuses to write in the modish pseudo-babble of typical academic art writing. Which means that when John doesn't like something, he just says so. I met him in the grounds of the National Art School in Darlinghurst, where the Blake Prize is on exhibition.
Well, John MacDonald, what were your overall impressions of the Blake Prize exhibition?
Well, I've come to believe over the years that the Blake Prize can't get any worse, but each year it confounds those expectations. And this year it's just such a sterile show. It's a the 60th anniversary, so you think there should be some sense of occasion. You think maybe this might be a little bit of a chance to look at a genuinely religious set of works, but in fact, it's rather the opposite. This year is one of the dullest years. It's one of the most religion-free years I think I've ever seen. I think the problem all comes back to the fact that once they start to call it a spiritual prize, or a prize for spiritual art and spirituality in art, rather than religion, you end up with a very different set of expectations. Because I think to a lot of people, especially artists today, spirituality is a soft concept, whereas religion is a hard concept. We think of religion as something which inculcates an organised set of beliefs, and not just a set of beliefs, but a set of beliefs that tell us what not to do, a set of prohibitions, a set of lines upon which we live our lives, whereas spirituality is a warm and fuzzy thing that anybody feels like they can have a piece of any time they like. They can have a deeply spiritual experience watching the football or having a bubble bath or something like that.
But, John, there are a lot of images here that are drawn from religious art. We see a triptych of a crucifixion. We see other triptychs as well.
Yes, well, there are a number of works which actually go back to the religious iconography in a parodic way, or in a way which relates to it in a way that's easy to detect in a sort of art historical reference. I think it's too much to expect to be looking for anything which shows any great signs of religious beliefs. That seems to have gone out the door a long time ago. But those works are few and far between in this show. There are so many more works which are basically abstract pictures of all descriptions, landscapes, conceptual works. There's a huge number of works which are there to do with multiculturalism and asylum seekers. Now, all of these things are issues that are well worth looking at in art and pressing issues for us today. But I just don't think that for what the Blake Prize is, I think it's become totally derailed. I think it's gotten sidetracked into something else. They really should just make it, they could be an entire exhibition for asylum seeker art, or an entire exhibition for abstract art with vaguely religious titles. People don't even bother with the titles anymore. But now they just call them untitled, and you leave it to you to figure out.
So are you really looking for reverential work? And if so, does the winning selection occupy that or fulfil that?
I don't think I'm looking for reverential work. I think I'm looking for work which has a genuine sense of engaging with religion and its practices. I know it's a spiritual prize, but as I've said, spiritual to me is a very soft word indeed today. It can mean anything. I would like to think that there are artists out there who are engaging with the tenets of religious belief, be they Christian, Jewish, Islamic, or whatever, and actually just trying to relate to those things, whether they relate as believers or whether they relate as sceptics. And I don't mind, say, Luke Roberts' piece where he's got a triptych, which is like a drag queens, and there's Richard Bell there is doing a crucifixion. So it's three versions of a crucifixion, and it's very high camp and it's very parodic, but at least it is a take on religion. And I know that Luke himself is religiously very mixed up, so probably it's closer to the mark than a lot of other things. There is about one painting of a crucifixion. Adam Cullen this year has done a very straight picture of Mary MacKillop. And then there's the question, is a portrait necessarily a work of religious art? I mean, we had this thing recently with the Cricket Art Prize, just to give a totally opposite example, where people do portraits of cricketers, and they were more or less excluded from the show because you would have a whole bunch of portraits which actually say nothing about the game or nothing about the nature of the prize. And you could say something similar about religion. Portraits, landscapes, all of these things get in a very sophisticated way, but they're not things that actually have any genuine religious dimension. I just think people have to engage with the whole idea of what religion is, and that is what is not happening with this Blake Prize. With the winner, Caleb Sabsabi's work, the problem is it's hardly a work of art at all. I mean, look, everything's a work of art, because if you say this is a work of art, it is. If this microphone was, I said it's a work of art, it's a work of art. Big deal. But this work is really putting the video in a very static place, the video cam, and recording just a domestic ceremony from a bunch of Sufis out in the western suburbs, and they're just sitting on a mat and chanting, and that's fine, that's their belief, that's what they do. But it's of very little interest, I think, for us to see this 90 minutes of Sufi chanting in the most casual possible way, because it doesn't actually tell us anything about what the Sufis are doing. It doesn't explain anything about how this process relates to religion or how this relates to us. It's one of those things that I think is just a bit of exotica. It's an oblique view into a daily ritual of somebody else's religion that we're sitting there and watching and thinking, oh, isn't that nice? And to give it the prize seems to me like a kind of fetishism. It's like making a big deal out of something because, essentially, because it's unfamiliar to us.
I was actually wondering whether a similar kind of video would have got the prize if it was 90 minutes of a prayer at Hillsong Church or the Lubavitcher Hasidim having a festival.
Yeah, so I think that's the obvious question. For every time you look at one side, you turn the mirror around and see what's behind it. It's the same argument that we had with Andres Serrano's Piss Christ. Would he have done, or would the National Gallery of Victoria have been happy to exhibit something which was, say, the Quran in a tank of piss instead of a plastic crucifix? It's as though there are certain rules that you can get by, and everything we do with Islamic religion, the Islamic religion, we have to be reverential, and everything we do with the Christian religion, we have to be sceptical. Well, you know, there are good and bad points on both sides of that, and I think ultimately, where the Caleb Sabsabi piece is, to me, not a very interesting piece, is that precisely it just doesn't do enough. A work of art has to have some element of transformation, something that holds you, something that hooks you and lures you in. And this transforms nothing. It's merely a presentation.
John, you've mentioned Piss Christ, but in 2007, the Blake Prize had two finalists, Jesus Christ morphing into Osama bin Laden, and also the Virgin Mary in a burqa. Is there a trend that we're seeing in the Blake Prize that is fascinated by Islam?
Well, the thing is, Islam has become one of the great social taboos in the Western world. Ever since 9/11, there's been an increasing fear and suspicion of the Islamic religion. There's been an increasing effort by moderate Muslims to portray Islam in positive ways. And there have been forms of extreme behaviour and terrorism all over the world. And now we've got these great upheavals in the Arab world too, which adds to the mix. But yes, I mean, the way that artists treat Islam often, I think, is in a kind of a soft left way, that we assume that we want to put forward this very, very positive image. And it's not even a positive image, it's a neutral image. It's an image which is so hands-off, there's almost nothing there. I admire those books by Muslims who have written critically, who have talked about things that, you know, are wrong with organised aspects of Islam. You know, you've got to approach a religion as a thinking person. Even though it's a question of belief, you can't come at it as though you've never really sat down and seriously given it some thought. And a lot of what we're seeing here is just taking things for granted. You take it for granted, you have to portray Islam in a kind of a nice and a friendly way, and that Christianity is something that can be portrayed in an unpleasant way. But, you know, nothing is like that. It's not black and white. And I think that the Blake Prize is really full of cliches and very simplistic ideas.
John, if you're right, does that say something about the way the art world views religion?
I think that is one of the very sad conclusions to draw from the Blake Prize and the continuing debilitation of the Blake Prize over a long period of time, that the art world, or maybe artists in general, do not have a strong religious feeling. That artists are interested in all sorts of things that touch upon spiritual or religious issues, but very few of them go the whole way. Of course, having said that, what we're seeing is a selection from all the entries that came in. So there may have been entries which had a genuinely religious commitment which are not shown because of the judges deciding these weren't interesting enough, therefore, etc., etc. The Blake Prize is trying all the time to show that it's inclusive, to show that it's avant-garde and cutting edge, and so consequently we have a lot of very boring and pointless videos. I think Aboriginal art complicates everything enormously because one could argue that everything painted by Aboriginal artists is fundamentally spiritual. Their pictures of the land is also a spiritual document. A carving, a pole, something like that, it's also to do with the ancestors, it's to do with a form of worship. The lines between spiritual belief and the way you live your life in those tribal communities is completely different to the way we do it in the West. Once you add those in, you could fill the entire show with bits of Aboriginal art, so it would fundamentally be an Aboriginal art show rather than a religious or spiritual show. We're dealing with issues. I mean, there's a little picture of a tsunami victims. So we're looking at compassion. We're looking at the issue of asylum seekers trying to make a home in Australia. We're looking at the multicultural aspects of life here, like the three versions of Chinese feet going from the grandmother with the small bound feet up to the high heels of the present day. All of these things are forms of social engagement. But to me, they're only touching in the most glancing way, if at all, on anything we'd consider to be religious art.
Has the Blake Prize perhaps turned into its opposite? Is it actually fearful of explicitly devotional religious art?
I think the Blake Prize has an absolute, shall we say, unholy dread of devotional art. I think if somebody were to put in a series of works that were genuinely religious or genuinely seemed to profess some kind of religious faith, that the judges each year would run a mile. I'd say just give the whole thing a revamp. It's in a terrible double bind because in order to be a fashionable, of-the-moment, cutting-edge art prize, it has to more or less dispense with all of the things that it was originally intended to do, which is to look at the role of religion in life and to actually celebrate religion, to make people think seriously about religion by bringing it through an art exhibition. When the Blake Prize began, it was an enormous controversy when Stan Rapitek won it with his Meditating on Good Friday as an abstract painting. Now, abstract paintings are the norm rather than the exception. And in many ways, if you were to give it to an abstract painting, that's an uncontroversial choice. Abstract paintings have become wallpaper in this show. You have these pictures, which some of them have religious titles, some of them don't. They're all to do with some vague engagement with the void. And you know, this becomes unbelievably tedious after a while. Now the cutting edge thing, obviously, is the video, is to put in these works of video art, and really all you've got to do is to be recognised. They're not giving the prize to great works of art, they're giving it to works of art which tick enough boxes to be considered to be worthwhile for the current preoccupations. The Blake does have a dread, I think, of religion and religious belief.
Does this come down to who is chosen to be a judge on the panel?
Yes, I mean, the role of the judges is crucial. Obviously, every art prize lives and dies on the basis of its judges. But the other thing is the judges are only as good as the works they have to choose from. So there's a series of processes. I mean, the selection, the pre-selection is the first process, and that's often difficult. That's where you make or break a show, because you're not really choosing a winner, you're choosing an exhibition, and you want to get a fair degree of variety in that. The next stage, when the judges actually sit down to choose a winner, or in this case, multiple winners, because there are so many small prizes associated with the Blake nowadays, that they have to put their own preferences and ideas forward. If you choose three people who are fundamentally committed to a highly contemporary point of view with art, you are going to necessarily get a highly contemporary winner of the Blake Prize. I think that they've got to think about really doing a more even-handed judging panel if they want to at least have some debate or some, you know, discussion about these things, because at the moment it's just slipping away. I find, as I said, the Blake Prize in many ways is a very uninteresting prize, because it's a prize where the things that are clumsy and silly about it are so obvious and so disappointing that you almost feel like it's hardly worth writing about anymore.
Art critic John McDonald. Nonetheless, Steve Meacham in the Sydney Morning Herald did write of the winning piece that it couldn't appear more ordinary, and that it was the very mundanity of Sabsabi's video which made it the unanimous choice of the judges. This is The Spirit of Things on ABC Radio National. Well, the Blake Prize as critic of religion is used to dishing it out. Now John McDonald turns the tables on the Blake Prize and gives it a serve. We're at the National Art School in Darlinghurst, Sydney.
John, it sounds like you think the Blake Prize is beyond repair. If you could repair it, if you could change it, what would you change?
Well, this is it. Is it beyond repair? I mean, there's a school of thought that nothing is really beyond repair and you can always fix a prize or fix something. I suppose the judging panel, when you've got three contemporary art people doing the judging, that to me takes it away from the years when they did have a representative of an organised religion. Even if it's a trendy vicar, when there's plenty of them around, you could stick them on there. I mean, Rod Pattenden is probably a trendy vicar, the man who has more to do with it than most. But they would get into this dilemma about, are we going to put in a priest? Are we going to put in a rabbi? Are we going to put in, you know, a mufti or something? And would these people actually want to do this? And are you only ever going to find a certain kind of religious personality that wants to be involved with something like the Blake Prize? However, I think it's a mistake not to have some person for whom the business of religion is central, as opposed to having three people for whom the business of religion is obviously marginal, to judge something which is fundamentally a religious prize. It just seems to me common sense that you would actually have somebody who's considering the issues and the ideas behind these things, and even to the extent of providing a dissenting voice, providing a more sceptical take on things, or providing that voice of the common man that says, well, I don't understand why this is significant art, or I find this quite boring, or I find this quite cliched. Instead, it seems that these things just go through year after year and sort of punctuated by works which are patently there to shock and offend and to challenge the bourgeoisie. And those things become even more tedious after a while with all of these self-conscious and puerile attempts to shock. Now, that to me, it denigrates the whole prize and it makes it uninteresting. It's an attempt to grab publicity for certain individuals. This year, there's really pitifully few of those things. This year, it's dull rather than self-consciously shocking.
So amongst the 70 finalists there, did you find any that did touch you, that did make you think these are beautiful or this is beautiful?
Well, I think of all this, of the finalists that I looked at, I could probably reduce the 70 to about 10. I'd say that Martin Sharp's Aboriginal Madonna has a place in this show, like Margaret Preston's Aboriginal Garden of Eden has a place in Australian art history. I'd say that Luke Roberts' rather camp Three Figures at the Base of a Crucifixion definitely has a place. There is one painting of the crucifixion, one genuine painting of the crucifixion out of 70 entries, which is quite extraordinary. There is, I think, that one by the two people from Christos Solkis, did the text. That is a perfectly interesting work. It's a conceptual work. It shows little black and white photos of places of belief with rather oblique and cryptic comments in text form next to them. But to me, that is a valid work of art because it says something. It engages with the topic. But of all of these things, there's very, very little amongst that that really stands out to me and says this is a wonderful work of art. I think amongst the abstracts, there's a very pale, shimmering work by Ella Dreyfus, which if I were going to put an abstract work in the show, really, I think Ella's work is probably the pick of them for me by a long way, because it actually does have some sense of the numinous, some sense of light coming out of this shifting veil-like forms. It's not enough just to drip paint on a canvas and say, oh, it's to do with the spirit, or it's to do with the void, or to do with the inner me, or whatever. I think all these things are signs of that perhaps the Blake Prize, it needs so much work. It really needs so much work. And it's got a huge amount of publicity in recent years, but I can't see how they're going to turn it into something brilliant again overnight. To me, it's so fatally caught up with the whole social trends around us and the increasing secularisation of everything that I think we've actually lost touch in all this. Maybe it should become a very small prize, and maybe a prize by invitation only.
John, I wonder whether the Australian interest in Aboriginal art, apart from its beauty and decorative quality, is saying something about Australians' interest in a spirituality that is hinted at, but perhaps not very obvious or even close to them. Again, it has a degree of exoticism because most Australians aren't Aboriginal, but is there something in that love of Aboriginal art that is yearning for a spiritual message?
Yes. I mean, I think that we are spectators to a great deal of Aboriginal art. We don't understand the tenor of beliefs that are behind these works. And to a certain extent, the sheer volume of Aboriginal art actually mitigates against there being any great spiritual message in most of these works. The vast majority of Aboriginal artworks being made today are being made in a very straightforward way for a marketplace. They're being made to be sold. They bring in income for people in communities, and in as much as good, but you'd be hard-pushed to find a great spiritual meaning. There are quite wonderful, deep, profound works of Aboriginal art, and there are artists who habitually produce these things, usually older artists for whom the connections with the land and the connections with the age-old spiritual beliefs are very, very close. I think we like the idea of this, But as I said, we look at it like spectators. We cannot enter into this. It's simply impossible for us to understand and enter into these beliefs which have been part of Aboriginal life for time immemorial. It's very, very hard for most contemporary Aborigines or urban Aboriginal people to get a handle on them. Try as they might to explore their own Aboriginality. Aboriginality is not something you can buy in a packet. It's not something you can put on like sun cream. It's something which is very hard to grasp unless it's already part of the way you've been brought up, the way you've lived. So when you look at the Blake Prize, you look at all of these Aboriginal works, there is a case to be made for every Aboriginal work for having some kind of spiritual dimension. But I think ultimately it distracts and takes so much away from the prize because it takes us into an entirely other dimension, and it reinforces that idea that we've had for so long that spirituality equals Aborigines, equals Aboriginal art, equals the desert, and so on and so forth. We end up with a series of received ideas which all Australians can recognise now. They've become part of our popular culture. They've become part of the way we see this land. And we used to think of the desert as a terrible, dry, awful, scary place. Now we think of it as a wondrous place where a little bit of rain causes all sorts of wonderful things to happen, where these deeply spiritual people live. You know, the fact is, this kind of view is hardly any less unrealistic than the previous view.
John, in the general art world, would you name artists who really do produce religious art?
There are people out there like, say, William Robinson, who paints landscapes, but he paints these things that he calls creation landscapes. You know, and he's genuinely a Christian. There is a genuine sense of belief in those landscapes that Bill paints. But having said that, they are landscapes, and they're landscapes imbued with a spiritual feeling, and they're very impressive paintings in their own right. Somebody like Gary Shedd has painted, you know, images which relate to religion, sometimes in a parodic way, but at least he's taking on the idea of religion and he's looking at the norms and the forms of religion. When you look in international terms, I mean, there's an artist, even a very big artist like Anselm Kiefer, for instance, is somebody who is engaged fundamentally with religion and often with the Jewish religion. Even though Kiefer is a German, part of the reparations, if you like, of what he feels like he has to do as a German is to engage with things like the Kabbalah. And the new museum they're opening in Tel Aviv, they were talking about opening it with a gigantic Kiefer retrospective, which is really an interesting, you know, development. So there are artists out there who I think understand religion in a philosophical sense, understand it as something which is personal, profound, something that really structures and determines the way people live their lives. Even if you look at an artist such as Savindari Vongputorn, who does abstract pictures, but all of these pictures are done in a kind of repetitive mantra-like way, with her father, who's a former Buddhist monk, burning little holes in them as she goes. There is a genuine mantra-like sense to this work. Or at least there is a good way of describing it and a more credible, plausible way of putting this stuff forward. With most of the things in the Blake, they're not even plausible. I think that there's no reason why religion, which has been such a fertile field for artists for thousands of years, and right down to people drawing on cave walls, cannot and should not be a fertile field for artists today. To me, it's unbelievable that we can come up with so few images in this Blake Prize, which actually strike me as having some profound relevance. And I think it's really says a lot about artists. I think it says that artists are just not thinking. A lot of the works you find at the Blake Prize are just things that people do anyway. Works they've had lying around the studio, they just stick them in the Blake with some vague religious association. That, I think, accounts for about half the show. When people are so slack and they're rewarded for their slackness, and every year more and more and more of this stuff is hung until they actually sit down and have a think about how can we fix this, whether it means reducing the show to something much smaller, whether it means doing an invitation only or at least inviting a few artists who seem to have done something, or even putting together a little retrospective of things that have been in the Blake Prize over the years. I think they've done it before, but this is maybe time to do it again at an anniversary time and just have a look, just see where it's going wrong, rather than pretending, as we do, that it's all hunky-dory and every year it gets better and isn't it wonderful?
Well, it sounds like the 60th anniversary is a time for reckoning for the Blake Prize. John McDonald, it's been great having you on The Spirit of Things. Thank you so much for your profound and provocative commentary.
Thank you. I'm only sorry I couldn't find anything nicer to say.
John MacDonald, art critic for the Sydney Morning Herald on the Blake Prize. His recent book is The Art of Australia, Volume 1. To find more about John and other guests today, just go to our website at abc.net.au/rn/spiritofthings. And you can download the audio while you're there. William Blake gave flight to his mystical visions and dissenting religious views in verse. I asked Rod Pattenden, the chair of the Blake, about its poetry prize, which this year was awarded to Robert Adamson.
Rod, the Blake Prize for Poetry is a more recent inclusion into the Blake Prize celebrations and competition. Where does the poetry end up? In which way can they appreciate it? Is it just published?
The Blake Poetry Prize, as you said, is a recent addition to the prizes that we offer. It just seemed to us such an appropriate thing, given that William Blake was one of the points of inspiration. He is a great poet as well as artist. And in Australian culture, poetry is one of the places you hear the quiet, shy voice of the religious imagination. So for the last 4 or 5 years, we've had up to 800 people submit works for the Poetry Prize. So it's Australia's third largest poetry prize, and we've been quite, again, surprised by the large number of people who submitted work. So as our exhibition opens and then travels around the country, we'll have an opportunity for people to listen. We're going to record the finalists and winning poems onto a CD, so you can sit and listen to the work and see it on a screen alongside the artwork. So in word and in text, we're tantalising our imagination with the ideas of hope and an extended boundary of what we might believe in life.
The Divine Dark, Robert Adamson. My worthiness is all my doubt, Emily Dickinson. A poem without birds. This morning the fern trees woke and opened out as sunlight dispersed a thick mist. This morning, in a memory incised with old phrases, mouthing words, then uttering a sentence with your unfinished breath. Banana trees rustle. A first breeze arrives, bringing the perfumes of the ebb. Watermarks down on the mudflats begin to evaporate. Morning turns its back on the sun, then gradually the night arrives. In the skylight, stars appear through the smoke screen from a burn-off. Brilliant pinholes. Stars are clustered trees, hung in the night sky. Whose body? Whose eyes? Look up into the heavens. The problem of suffering expands forever. Dust and light again. Maybe time, if it exists. On the table, a cicada, flecked with flour, opening its dry cellophane wings. The cat flies across polished space, illuminated by the kitchen's energy light-saving bulb, a Philips genie. Life like a dirty wind, blowing straight through a snowy head. Cat's eyes, tint of fur, rustling wings. Praise life with broken words.
Robert Adamson reading from his poem Via Negativa, The Divine Dark. You can watch videos with most of the winners of the Blake Prize and see the artworks by clicking the links on our website at abc.net.au/rn/spiritofthings. The program was produced by me and Jeff Wood, with sound engineering today by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. Next week, the Gospels meet the performing arts when a Broadway actor ditches the commercial scene and takes up a new kind of theatre for the mind and spirit. Bruce Kuhn takes the Gospel of Luke to the stage and straight to the heart. Meet Bruce and Luke next week on The Spirit of Things with me, Rachel Kahn.
Hi, Richard Adie here. You're a liar. Me too, of course. We all are, and we're much better at it than knowing when we're being lied to. David Craig can tell, though, and you should hear what he has to say. You should also meet Tanvir Ahmed, the psychiatrist who writes. Born in Bangladesh, he grew up in Western Sydney. He's fascinating. Oh, and the incident with the red underpants. You'll find them all on the Life Matters website.